Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me first say what an honour it is to be asked to speak to you here today and to share a platform with such distinguished speakers. Thank you, Andreas, for the invite. As was previously mentioned, my paper is on the law of publicity rights. I want to begin by showing some figures that I think will make your eyes water. From the slides here, I've taken some data from the Forbes Rich List of the highest paid athletes for 2014, which breaks down the earnings of the top 10 athletes in the world. If we just look at two of the top 10, number seven, we have the Swiss tennis player Roger Federer. Federer earned last year a total of $56.2 million. I know, I'm jealous. Of that, however, only $4.2 million was in salary and winnings, with a whopping $52 million in endorsements alone. If we just take one more from this list, Tiger Woods, the famous American golfer at number six, earned a total of $61.2 million last year, according to the Forbes Rich List. Of that, a mere $6.2 million was salary and a whopping $55 million in endorsements. Nice work if you can get it. And to think my father told me to study for my exams rather than practicing my golf swing or my backhand. Shows what he knew. I just mentioned these figures by way of introduction to highlight that given the economic value of endorsements to the modern celebrity, one might expect that the law protecting what are called image or publicity rights, the right to control the use of one's image, likeness, name, voice, etc., would be robust and philosophically sound and uniformly protected across Europe. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And my paper seeks to examine why, as a society, whether one is famous or not, it is important to individual freedom that such comprehensive protection exists. The issue is topical in my own country, in Ireland, at the moment, because we have proposed for the first time to introduce statutory regulation in this area in the form of the Privacy Bill 2012, while the state of Guernsey in the Channel Islands has gone one step further with the actual introduction of legislation in the form of the Image Rights Ordinance, also in 2012, which provides for the world's first image rights register that entitles a personage to register certain features or characteristics associated with their personality. Like Ireland, the UK refuses to provide recognition of such rights, preferring to use other indirect means of protection, through the tort of passing off, for example. As recently as January of this year, the English Court of Appeal in Fenty versus Topshop Limited confirmed that English law does not recognise image rights. This case involved the use by the defendant, a fashion retailer, of the following image of the famous pop star Rihanna, derived from a photograph taken while she was shooting a music video for a single from her Talk That Talk album, and which had been lawfully acquired by Topshop. Topshop, with which Rihanna had a previous commercial relationship, used the photograph here on a T-shirt, sold it without Rihanna's consent. Rihanna successfully sued in a claim for passing off on the basis that because this particular image was synonymous with the publicity surrounding her new album, its use by Topshop essentially misrepresented to the consuming public that she had endorsed the defendant's product. In other words, because the photograph was distinctly associated with the music video, the public might believe that she had agreed to endorse the defendant's product as part of the album's promotion. But interesting in this judgment is what wasn't said. Implicit in the decision, therefore, is the view that had the image used by Topshop been a more straightforward stock image of Rihanna, lawfully acquired, then the absence of an image right would have been fatal to her claim. Part of the reluctance in acknowledging image rights stems from the inability of the courts and legislature to satisfactorily resolve what I consider are the underlying philosophical basis of such rights. One school of thought favouring such rights argues that they should be founded in the individual's right to privacy. Critics of this approach argue that grounding such rights on privacy is inadequate protection because it's limited and it only guards those aspects of our personality which are deemed to be obviously private. What's more, because the right to privacy is personal and therefore non-transferable, the individual then lacks the power to control the use of their image. For example, because the photograph of Rihanna here could not be considered of itself to be demeaning or invasive in any way, its use could not have said to have infringed her privacy. A different approach to such rights has been to view them as a form of property. As a property right, it's only images which are deemed private. It's not only images which are deemed private that are protected. Moreover, as a property right, it becomes transferable, thereby providing for greater control over the image to the individual. Under this view, it matters not whether the photograph of Rihanna was private or intimate. It is her property, and she could decide what uses it should be put. Some of the property right justifications for the right of publicity include John Locke's labour theory of property, which I'm sure you're familiar with. This effectively provides that the individual has a moral right in the thing of value transformed because of one's efforts. Similarly, there's a similar justification derived from economic theory or economic analysis of law, and the notion that the protection of publicity rights is necessary to incentivize individuals to create culturally important symbols. Such creativity, so the theory goes, is encouraged by granting the exclusive right to control such symbols to others, although there is little empirical evidence that this actually is the case. However, my paper is going to concentrate on personality-based justifications for the protection of such rights. Moralists such as Bluestein would justify the recognition of publicity rights on the basis that they are necessary, like the right to privacy, to protect an aspect of human dignity. One of the key elements of the dignity of the person is the ability to be able to exercise free will. And according to Immanuel Kant, the famous philosopher, all humans are similar in that they share this attribute. However, they do so in different forms. While we might share the characteristics of personhood, it is our personal identity that makes each of us unique. Thus, when aspects of a person's identity, such as their name or likeness, are appropriated for commercial purposes without their consent, that individual's dignity is not respected. It represents an attack on the individual's ability to develop their personhood freely in their own way, and thereby undermines individual autonomy. Privacy is a key aspect of personality, as it provides a space free from unwanted intrusion for the person to grow as an individual. Moreover, the autonomy of the individual has a social value because, as the Irish authors Delaney and Carlin observe, developing a social identity shapes the individual's self-identity. Consequently, subjecting an individual's name or likeness, the external manifestations of their identity, to unauthorised control by another can undermine that individual's autonomy to exercise her free will. As one's identity is central to individuality, therefore, an assault on identity is an assault on one's dignity. Personality theories justify the right of publicity not because the individual has expended effort in creating the persona, for example, but rather on the basis that it is necessary to protect persona if one is to be truly free. Kantian philosophy is focused on the intangible persona and not simply economic considerations. Thus, personality theories provide that because one's persona is part of us, we are morally entitled to claim ownership over it. Hence, the wrong is not merely the economic impact of the appropriation, but is instead, as Bluestein notes, the wrongful exercise of dominion over another. In a number of decisions, the European Court of Human Rights has consistently held that the right to dignity is a basic human right of every citizen and includes the right to control one's image. In the famous von Hanover versus Germany case in 2005, the applicant, Princess Caroline of Monaco, had brought an action for infringement of her Article 8 right to a private and family life under the Convention, following the publication of a number of photographs of her in public and quasi-public places. In upholding her claim, the court held that the concept of private life extends to aspects relating to personal identity, such as a person's name or a person's picture. The jurisprudence of the court was further developed with its decision, and forgive my Greek here, Reklos and Devaralos versus Greece in 2009. Here, a child was born to Greek nationals in a private clinic. Poor interpreter, I can't keep up with me. My students always castigate me for this. A child was born to Greek nationals in a private clinic. The baby was immediately placed into a sterile unit to which only medical personnel had access. As part of a photography service provided to parents, a photographer entered the sterile unit and took a photograph of the baby face on. Naturally, the parents were very upset at this intrusion, particularly as the photographer had, without their consent, entered the unit in order to take the photograph and thereby endangered the health of the child. The management of the clinic appeared to be indifferent to the parents' complaint regarding the intrusion and even refused to hand over the negatives of the photographs to them. The parents' claim before the domestic courts failed on the basis that the baby's personality rights had not been affected because, given his age, his psychological and emotional state had not yet developed to the extent that his rights could have been considered to have been infringed. The child's parents appealed to the European Court of Human Rights on the basis that their rights under Article 8 had been breached. In upholding the claim, great emphasis was placed on the fact that the clinic refused to give up the negatives of the photograph taken without the parents' consent. In refusing to give up the negatives, The clinic had undermined the parents' and child's ability to control the use to which such photographs could be used in the future. In acknowledging the importance of an image right to one's personality, the court stated, a person's image constitutes one of the chief attributes of his or her personality, as it reveals the person's unique characteristics and distinguishes the person from his or her peers. The right to protection of one's image is thus one of the essential components of personal development. Without something more, however, the Kantian right to personality provides limited protection to one's image. It's a defensive right only and does not provide the individual with the degree of control over the use of that image which is necessary. If the image is to be interpreted solely based on privacy, it becomes inalienable and its use cannot be transferred under an exclusive license, for example. The economic value is therefore diminished. Why would I pay you for the use of your image if I could take it for free, or if I couldn't prevent others from using it in the similar manner? More importantly, it's demeaning to the dignity of the individual if one cannot control the commercial use of one's image. If the individual is to be truly free in relation to her personality, she must not only have a freedom from, but a freedom to, something Professor Gibbons spoke about earlier this morning. Moreover, the privacy right is limited in this context because one's privacy is not always engaged in such cases, because the use of the image might not necessarily offend against our traditional notions of what is private. An answer to some of these queries might come in the form of Hegel's theory of property. According to the German philosopher Georg Hegel, in order to exist as more than abstract beings, persons have the ability to, must have the ability to impose themselves on the external world. Developing Kant's theory of personality, Hegel believed that in order to make the Kantian freedom a reality, it was necessary for it to manifest itself externally. In Hegel's words, a person must translate his freedom into an external sphere in order to exist as an idea. Thus, individual will exists both internally and externally. Hegel believed that it was through the ownership of property that the autonomous individual could express their freedom beyond the physical person and into the material world. The recognition of a property right, according to Hegel, is dependent on three things. In the first place, one must establish possession or occupancy of the object. The individual must establish that her will is manifested in the thing. When a person takes possession of an object, according to Hegel, she differentiates herself from others not associated with it, and thereby gains specificity from the particular. There must be some outward sign of possession. A person could embody their will in the thing either through physical custody of it, marking it, or imposing a form upon it. In essence, establishing to others that it is yours. Because an individual cannot claim things external to her as of her right, objects are res nullis, that is, nobody's property, and first occupation of the thing may give rise to ownership of it. Secondly, in order to establish ownership, Hegel believed that the individual must exploit the thing. In other words, the individual must establish her dominance over the object. However, the individual's use of the thing could, in these circumstances, become unhealthy or needy. And thus, the third characteristic of property rights is alienation. The autonomous individual can forsake their rights in the thing by exercising their right to remove their will from it. Thus, property is alienable, and with the consent of the original owner, can be transferred to another. So how does this theory of property apply to personality rights? As we have already seen, the right of publicity can be justified on the basis that the wrongful interference with the persona of the individual through the misappropriation of the individual's identity is an attack on the dignity of that individual. The individual's external signifiers of personality are the external manifestations of one's will and can be protected through a Hegelian property right, which grants the right to control the use of these aspects of one's personality to the individual. This, in essence, would be a hybrid right incorporating both personal and property interests. Admittedly, it might be difficult to draw clear lines between those aspects of personality which are completely inseparable from our being and therefore non-transferable from those aspects which are capable of being the subject, even if in a limited way, of property rights. The question depends on the extent to which such rights could be considered to be external. There are certain aspects of personality that are always considered to be internal. Our right to physical liberty, for example, can never be contracted away. But at the other end of the scale, we have the ability to donate blood, donate a kidney, for example. So it's not necessarily a black and white issue between personality and property. A theory which supports the existence of personality rights based on protecting the dignity of the individual need not rely on Locke's labour theory of property as a justification. The likes of Kim Kardashian would be happy to know that regardless of how much or how little mental effort the celebrity put into the development of her image, nothing can alter the fact that it is she and no one else who has the closest connection with that persona. Ownership of the signifiers of identity is an external manifestation of individual will. Ownership defined by occupancy is established on the basis that one's personality is part of us. External signifiers of personality can therefore be viewed as an extension of one's personality, and as Hodge notes, such rights grant individuals the power to control the use of various attributes of self. The recognition of publicity and rights of publicity as a form of personality property does raise concerns for freedom of expression. Granting a monopoly in the form of an overextensive right of publicity has the potential to limit the use of cultural or artistic symbols, whose meanings could be funneled into the hands of the few, who may unduly restrict their use to the detriment of the rest of society. The right of publicity proposed here should not be absolute. It is submitted that the appropriate balance between the right of freedom of expression and the right of publicity could be achieved with the application of certain restrictions to the right. First, the right should not prohibit all uses of the individual's persona and should only become actionable where the individual's identity is exploited for advertising or commercial purposes. The right should protect one from becoming a commercial slave to another. Consequently, uses which benefit society and do not undermine the individual's dignity are not unlawful. Therefore, akin to the application of the fair use doctrine in copyright law, uses of the individual's image which are incidental will not give rise to liability. Second, the right of publicity should only apply to uses which are inextricably linked to the identity of the individual. Freedom of expression is threatened by overly broad rights of publicity where oblique connections are made with the individual's identity. Under Hegelian notion of property, vague references to one's identity would not be sufficient to ground a claim for infringement of the right. Thus, as Hammerly has observed, the use of identifying indicia must unequivocally, uniquely, and directly identify the plaintiff if an action is to be successful. Therefore, a right of publicity does not necessarily preclude individuals from developing their own identity simply because they borrow certain aspects from others, as Lady Gaga has done from Madonna, as Madonna has done from Marilyn Monroe, for example. Third, concerns about freedom of expression are heightened where the right of publicity, like other forms of property, is recognised as being descendable. The fact that control of an individual's image could be passed on to her heirs upon death raises the spectre of depriving society of that image for an indefinite period, long after the individual has passed away. Consequently, a durational limit, similar in nature to copyright protection, should be placed on the right for a set period of time after the individual's death. I was going to look at some aspects of Irish law in this area, hence the speed in which I was speaking, but I'll pass over that. Suffice it to say that the Irish courts are making the very same mistakes, I would argue, and the Irish legislature are making the very same mistakes that other jurisdictions have made this area. They have developed and drafted a privacy bill, and within that privacy bill, they're placing a right of publicity. They're going down the same route of this tension between the property aspects of rights of personality versus the rights to privacy itself. That bill has been stuck in our parliament for the last 2 years. That's Ireland for you. So I don't know whether it'll ever see the light of day. But in conclusion, the protection of image rights should concern us all, and not just the wealthy and famous. Certainly, these rights might be economically more valuable to the celebrity, and given their financial resources, celebrities might be more likely to litigate. However, we're all equally deserving of this protection. Some Native Americans believed that to take one's photograph was to steal one's soul. While this belief may have been based on the ignorance of technology, there might be something to it. In this digital age, the ease and speed by which our images can be utilised exposes all of us to the potential theft of our souls. A publicity right based on personality and protected through Hegel's notion of property is a legitimate response to these risks, I believe. Thank you very much for your attention.